Today is January 9th, 2021. This is, no, it's 2022, man. What the heck? Wow.
You're still writing 2021 on all your podcasts.
This is episode number 567, not a palindrome, of the Apple Context Machine. I'm Brian Chaffin, former editor-in-chief at the Mac Observer. That's really weird to say. To get the full story on anything we cover in this particular episode, you can visit, however, macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note. You know what? I don't even know where to send you. Yeah, things are up. But anyway, yeah. Hey, Jeff. Gamut. You're here. Thank
Brian.
You.
It's, you know, it's awesome to be hanging out with you. And I realized when you said former editor-in-chief, it's actually technically accurate for me to be able to say former managing editor.
Yes, that is true. That is true. So,
hey, anything new going on in your life?
Well, longtime listeners may have caught the news that Dave Hamilton and I have sold the Mac Observer. It was announced the day after we recorded the last show, which means it was announced several days before I posted the last show.
See, this just goes to support my theory that time is not linear at all.
At least not when it comes to me. So here's the thing. Are you interested in hearing the Apple Context Machine continue? And is there any world in which you would not want that to once again be officially me and Jeff as opposed to just de facto me and Jeff?
Oh my God, I hadn't thought about it as de facto.
It is kind of recently. It's been
but you know what? Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I guess those are really good questions for the studio audience.
And for the time being, you can probably write me at acm@macobserver.com. That will probably continue to go to me for a while.
Any other places people might be able to hunt you down? Twitter?
Yeah,
something like that?
I don't know what I'm going to do with my TMO Brian Twitter account, which is the Twitter account I've always used for the tech related stuff. I have a separate Twitter account at GeekTels. It's GeekTells. And GeekTales is where I was doing my stuff about writing fiction. And it's where I moved all my political, what little political stuff I post on Twitter anymore. So, you know, don't follow me there if you're not interested in that. But, and of course I've got my blog at geektells.com, and this show will be posted on TMO. Dr. Kurt, and Dr. Butler are the new owners of the site. And, I'm so excited to see what they're going to be doing with it. I think I said, We had Kelly had me and Dave and Dr. Kurt on last Monday's daily observations. And one of the thoughts that sort of hit me at the end, and I said it live on the show, was that TMO's story has been 23 years. We celebrated our 23rd anniversary the last week of December. And what's fascinating to me is that story continues, but now I have a completely different perspective on experiencing that story, because now I'm watching others take that story and make new and good things with it without me. And that's weird and interesting, and also I think really cool. I love that people who are passionate about the Mac space are continuing to tell and make and create the Mac Observer story, but then also to tell the stories in the Apple related world.
Yeah. You know, Brian, as you're saying it, you're now in a position where this, where you're experiencing this from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I can totally relate, because when I moved on from Mac Observer, I had that same feeling. It was new and interesting and different to experience what was happening with Mac Observer as someone who was looking into it as opposed to being in the middle of it. So yeah, I totally get that. And let me ask you a question, Brian. Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling?
Oh, it's weird, man. It's weird. It is weird. TMO has been, the Mac Observer has been my public identity for 23 years. That is the vast majority of my adulthood. And it's not, unfortunately, it's less than half my life, but it is the vast majority of my adulthood. It is, I guess previously I had a public identity, or, you know, a limited public identity as the Domino's guy. Cause I worked 10 years at Domino's Pizza. And
isn't that your new album that's coming out next week? Limited Public Identity.
Limited Public Identity. That's no. Yes, funny. But anyway, the TMO has been my public identity for so long, and it is not anymore. I will always be the co-founder of TMO by definition. But I'm no longer the editor in chief, and it's my baby's in the hands of other people. And I say my baby, the baby that Dave and I produced together, because we love each other, is in the hands of other folks, the loving hands of other folks.
Yeah. When two hardcore Apple fans really love each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dr. Butler and Dr. Kurt are also they're Apple fans, and I am very excited to see where they take TMO and just to see what they do with it. And it is an exciting change. It was the right time for us to sell. And Dave made this point publicly. We weren't looking to sell, but Dr. Kurt approached us. And
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. He spent we basically ignored him. And he spent a couple of weeks.
As one does.
Well, we have gotten occasional offers for the site, but it was never anything really very serious. But Dr. Kurt spent time and effort to convince us that he was the right guy. And you know, once we saw that, we realized it was the right time for us to sell and to put the site into someone else's hands.
Well, good for you. And all right, now I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Because apparently now I'm just interviewing you.
Yeah, excellent. That's great. Yeah. We've got to have a show.
So, right. Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. this is why I love you, Brian. Yeah, thank you. But okay. No, I see how it is. So, hey, I'm Brian Chaffin. I'm going to sell the Mac Observer and then invite Jeff on to Apple Context Machine and just make him do all the work.
It must be Tuesday. why did you leave again?
I think I hear my mom calling. I got to go.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, the whole jazz hands thing that I did with my really bad Brian impression, I think it really, really brought it home.
Oh, it did. It brought it home, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job.
I was going to ask you a question.
Yes.
So do you have any plans for what you're going to do now, or at least plans that you're willing to share with our loving audience, with our tolerant audience,
our grudging audience, our reluctant. Anyway, yeah. So I don't have. I mean, part of it is I've had various side projects in the works for a while. But a big thing that I want to be able to do is to have time to write fiction again.
Excellent.
Like I want to finish telling Mason's story. Mason's the protagonist in the novel that I have written, but have not yet sold. May end up self-publishing that one. And I would like to finish Mason's story, and I've got two other worlds in my head that I've been casually working on, and honestly just haven't had the time, especially in the last 18. It's funny, as COVID hit and I was forced to stay at home, I found myself ever busier. So
isn't it funny how that happens?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for one thing, I am going to enjoy having a bit of a break at the very least.
Sure. So after 23 years, yeah, you deserve an afternoon off.
Yeah, you know, it's been a lot of hard work there, and so yeah, no, I don't, I definitely don't have anything to announce, but that's not because I'm being coy. I don't have specific plans yet, other than I'm hoping that I'm able to get back to writing fiction.
Awesome.
And so that means, right, by the way, probably no real announcements for a while. But if I do have anything to announce on the fiction front, it'll be over at geektales.com.
Cool. And I'm looking forward to beta reading for you.
Yeah. Thank you. That's ridiculously kind of you. I might add that I may even actually put content on Geektales again. Maybe. We'll see.
Oh, fun. Okay, so my next question is for the studio audience and mm-hmm. everyone that's playing along at home. If Brian were to start self-publishing his novel, would you buy it?
Would I buy it?
Would they buy it? Would our audience buy it?
Oh, yeah.
Look, I just took ownership of the audience, our audience.
Well, and if I self-published, I'd probably put some content up on the site, my blog as a teaser. I've got some short stories set in that universe and stuff. I don't know. I wonder if in all the years of actually talking about this book, I haven't really gotten that many questions about it. So I don't know how much interest there is.
Okay, people. Let Brian know if you would be interested in buying his book, and I'll give you just my opinion as someone that has read the book through its evolution. It's really good. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the story.
You are very kind, Jeff. As a matter of fact, you were probably instrumental in me even thinking that I could get through it. And finish it and sticking with it. You were definitely one of my biggest cheerleaders. And I say that because you were reading the book when I was learning how to write fiction, and it was a pile of crap.
But your pile of crap became fertilizer, and then your fertilizer made all of the beautiful flowers grow.
That is very, very kind of you to say. I am very proud of the book that exists today. I'm extremely proud of it. And a big part of that pride definitely comes from all the help I got from like all the people. One of the things that, unless you really pay attention to like forwards and prefaces and then like the back of the book stuff from authors, like there is no book that is the creation of a single person. Very, very few books. Hugh Howie, of course, will let you know that he is responsible for all of his, like, you know, good fortune, and that he's the only person. But the vast 90, if you've read a good book, there were many people that helped that author make that happen. And not just on the publishing side. like their friends, their supporters, partners, their family members, people that cheered them on. Beta readers. Beta readers are invaluable. Beta readers that will tell you when there's a problem are worth their weight in gold. And then critique partners, which are usually other writers who help you find those problems and work out those problems. Man, those folks are worth their weight in gold press latinum, which I don't even know what that's actually supposed to be, but it's.
I know what gold press latinum is because I paid attention in Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Okay, so gold press latinum. Latinum is a rare and highly valuable metal that at room temperature is in a liquid state.
Okay.
And so so to be able to use latinum as a form of currency, you need it to not be in a liquid form. So what they do is they take gold and make like shells out of gold. And then the latinum is encased inside the shell. So gold pressed latinum.
So if you cracked it open and, like a chocolate,
then all the latinum would run out. And one of the reasons they use gold is, it's not going to corrode, but also it has almost no monetary value because it at that point in the Star Trek universe, gold is so easily obtainable that it doesn't have a real monetary value.
Well, yeah. Which is interesting because gold has so many industrial uses and electronics uses that I'm not sure that I guess it depends on how readily. All right, that's interesting. Thank you. I did not know any of that. And I did not pay attention to Deep Space Nine after the first couple seasons.
I can appreciate that because I actually powered through those first couple seasons as they were airing, and oof, it shouldn't have been renewed after season one. But I'm glad ultimately it came around and became a good series. I also powered through Babylon 5 through the entire thing.
You got through it.
Yeah, I watched all five seasons.
Okay.
And I will offer no spoilers. I will, however, say I have no idea why they made season 5. There was no reason for it at all. But and Babylon, I'm sure there are people that will be like, well, yeah, what about this thing and this thing and this thing? And all of those this things that you want to toss out, great. But they didn't need – you didn't need a season for that. They beautifully wrapped it up in four seasons.
Huh. All right. That's fair. That is
yeah, and oh my God, Brian, they needed some beta readers for that series.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
It was a very frustrating season because there was some really good stuff in it, and while you're looking at something and thinking, wow, this is really great storytelling. At the same time, there might as well be a clown riding through honking rubber chickens because it's just that frustrating because something will be written so poorly, but these actors are turning it into something better. But then it's like really great story where they completely fumble part of it. Anyhow.
All fair,
yeah.
All fair, and that bringing it back to the importance.
Oh, right. It's about you. Forgot.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much. But the importance of beta readers is cannot be overstated, and every book was written in some part, almost every book, again, with all due respect to Hugh Howey. Almost every book is written by a village, especially for new authors. Stephen King, probably at this point, tosses books out by himself. I who knows if he needs beta readers at this point. But for the rest of us, for the 99.99999% of aspiring authors and even published authors, those beta readers and critique partners are incredibly valuable, and you were among the most valuable. So I thank you.
Well, thank you. And I learned so much about how to be a beta reader for fiction, because prior to your book, all my beta reading was done for tech books.
Sure.
And I feel like I'm in a much better position now to beta read fiction.
Have you ever thought about writing fiction? I'm embarrassed to say, but I've never asked you that question.
Occasionally, but I've never really thought about it to the point where it's become like this serious thing. It's more like, that might be interesting. And then I'm off to something else, like making dinner. So I don't know if the right idea hits me, I know how I am, and I would run with it.
If you
be garbage, but I would run with it.
If you do, as long as you ask nicely, I'd think about beta reading for you. I'm kidding, man. I'm absolutely like,
I think I'm going to cry.
I'd be your critique partner if you wanted me, and your beta reader if you wanted me, and I'd be happy about it.
Cool. I appreciate that. Thank you.
For sure. For sure. Anyway, those are my not plans, really. I don't have anything specific to announce. I will tell our listeners, just so you know, if this show continues, it will continue only with Jeff and I as partners.
Because you love me and I'm a glutton for punishment.
Because I love you and because I really want you to do half the show posting so that they'll actually go up.
and actually, I do love you too, Brian.
I thank you, brother. And I have, you know, doing this show without you, as much as I loved having the other guest hosts on, I was never happier than when you came back and would do occasional episodes, and then increasingly did all the episodes. I like making this show with you. I like doing this show with you. And if the show continues,
it'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be with the two of us being partners. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Might be a couple of weeks before there's another episode, but there will be at least one more episode.
So nothing is changing.
No, man. Did episodes every week for the last, like, I don't know, 6 weeks or something.
Oh, I'm aware of that because I think I was on most of them. But if I didn't take advantage of an opportunity to give you a hard time about the stretch where shows didn't happen on a regular basis, I feel like I would be failing as a friend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's totally true. And another thing I would add, by the way, that I would very much like to hear from folks is I know that obviously our audience is pretty Apple-centric. Now, especially in the last, I don't know, year or two, I've allowed the show to have, you know, broader and broader interests. It talked a lot about cryptocurrency, done a couple of episodes on lightsabers. My point is, I would love to hear from people about how you would feel if we further broaden the show, not away from Apple, but to include more, like to be the context machine as opposed to the Apple context machine.
That's a really great question.
Yeah.
I would love to hear what people think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, acm@macobserver.com is still going to come to me for the time being at the very least. So you can write me there. Let me know your thoughts. Good or like, feel free to roast me. I mean, whatever you're thinking, I'd love to hear it. And I don't say that. I don't say that casually. I'm really interested in what you have to, what you think. Jeff, yeah. Not so much. Jeff doesn't care. Jeff, he doesn't care what you think. Me, I care.
Yeah, I'm like Honey Badger.
So I'm completely lying. You know who is not lying, Jeff? It's LinkedIn Jobs, because they're sponsoring this week's episode. Let me tell you about them. We all know, like, right, COVID still a thing. Hiring people can be hard, right? It can be really hard to find and hire the right candidates for, especially for your small business. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs makes it easier to find the people you want to talk to faster and for free. You can create a job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of over 770 million people. It's so many people. You can focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience. You can use screening questions to get your role in front of only the most qualified people, right? That's very useful, very handy, very easy to use. And then you can use simple tools on LinkedIn Jobs to quickly filter and prioritize who you would like to interview and hire. It's probably why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. The thing that I like the most about LinkedIn Jobs is the dashboard, where you can manage not only your job postings, but the candidates for those positions that you have. It makes it easier to go through the hiring process. And I you know, hiring can be difficult at the best of times. But in a tight job market, you need every advantage you can get, and you should absolutely and positively check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster. And did you know that every week, nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Again, if you're interested in hiring, you should absolutely check out LinkedIn Jobs. And I appreciate them sponsoring this week's episode. Jeff, we have another topic. Exploring. It's true. Thanks for exploring. That's beautiful, man. Thanks for exploring my post-TMO identity with me. I appreciate that. But the other thing, and I say this like it was my idea, you totally brought this to the table because, you know, again, must be Tuesday. You pointed out that it's the 15th iPhone anniversary.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. From when Steve Jobs got on stage and
are said, you getting it?
Do you get it? Are you getting it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the actual phrase? Was it, are you getting it yet?
Something like that. You know, if I were someone that showed up prepared, like a proper professional, I would have rewatched the video of the event.
That would have been such a good idea.
It would have been such a good idea. Although you'd think that I would remember, since I was sitting in the audience when Steve made the announcement, did the keynote.
We were both.
It was only 15 years ago.
And then we were both standing in a crowd like 15 people deep around a glass case where you couldn't touch the iPhone.
Right. Yeah.
Probably because it would have fallen apart.
It probably would have. Yeah. It was probably like held together with Elmer's glue to keep the simulated screen in a case.
there's no doubt about that, man. It was like an armored glass. I mean, it was like that thing was not going to be exposed to, like, you know, people or air.
I'm surprised no one kicked it over just to see what would happen.
I was all a bunch of, they were all Apple fanboys and girls. No one's going to kick it.
That's
over.
True.
What are you talking about, man?
I know. It was a different time.
If Samsung had been
when
there,
we lived in a world filled with love. And,
Google had been there, maybe they would have.
Yeah, maybe they would have. If Microsoft was there, but if Steve Ballmer was there, then maybe, yeah.
Developers. So the thing is, it was a pretty it was a pretty momentous event, that iPhone introduction. And we had all been, like, for years we had heard rumors that Apple was working on a phone, and we all wanted, like, Apple to make some kind of phone. We were super excited about this idea of like having like an Apple, like something, you know, like a Palm Pilot or something.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I remember a friend bought a Treo like right before that Macworld, and they were showing it to me. I think it was the day before the keynote. Mm-hmm. And they're like, look at this. This is so cool. And look at all the things I can do with it. And I finally got a cool phone. It's not my flip phone anymore. And sometimes I guess I'm not a nice person, but, you know, I don't mean it, but I just looked him square in the eyes and I said, wow, you just wasted your money. And they're like, what? And I said, Apple's announcing their thing tomorrow. And you're going to wish you had that instead of this Treo you just bought. And they didn't believe me. And then the next day it happened, and I saw him after keynote.
Who was this?
Like,
Name names.
No, I'm not going to name names because I don't want to publicly shame.
Will you text it to me? I won't say it. I just want to know.
Yes, I will. Hold on. I'll text it to you. To you right now.
Excellent.
But yeah, they were not happy with my take on buying that phone.
Well, so yeah, this was 2007, right? I mean, okay, that makes sense. So 2007, Apple was still, I mean, and Apple would continue to be perceived as beleaguered, even as they were making more and more money after the iPhone release. But it's, you know, Steve had only been back for what, 9 years?
Right. Did he still have the eye on the front of his title? No, I don't remember.
That was gone.
Okay. Yeah. See, this is my problem with time not being linear.
Yeah. And I could be wrong about that, but I think it was like maybe 2003 or 4 or 5 at the latest, where he said, I'm going to drop the interim from my title. And there was cheering. And I can't remember if that was WWDC. I think it was WWDC. I think.
Yeah. I can't remember for sure.
Yeah. I don't. And I say that, and I don't know that that's, boy. Yeah. Time does weird things to memories. So it wasn't that long, this 2007 event where Apple announced this wasn't that long after, it was just a couple of 2 or 3 years, I think. When was the Palm Pilot 5? I'm looking.
You know, it's really hard for me to remember the Palm Pilot timeline, because they just kept throwing so many new models out so fast.
Okay, it was many years after the 5. The 5 was introduced in 1999. So,
oh wow.
But I remember seeing that and thinking it was so cool because it had a built-in modem. And
oh right, yeah, that was a big thing.
I want to lay some context out, because that's what we do here. The period from the Palm Pilot 5, 1999, when it was introduced, and the iPhone's introduction in January of 2007. Of course, it didn't ship until 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That was 8 years. And it has been 15 years since the iPhone was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like,
and still no stylus on the iPhone.
Still no. Yeah. Well, you got them on the end of your finger. Dooky dooky doo.
Still. I've really missed. I can't even do it.
Dooky doo. Duke-a-duke-a-duke.
There we go. Duke-a-duke-a-duke.
That's like one of the, like, I'm so like pissy with Steve, you know, God rest his soul, for saying that about the iPad in particular. Got styluses, like, you know. Like,
you get styluses coming out of your hands. I mean, like, wrists,
tell that to artists. Thank you. Goodbye. He's very passionate about this.
I mean, that's why I have a box stashed away in a closet that is just packed with styluses.
Sure. Sure. And don't get me wrong. Like, I love the fact that Steve insisted that you not need a stylus. But to say, to operate the thing, it was brave, because everyone was stylus oriented, and he was right, and I love that he did that, but like refusing to make not arming artists with a stylus to me was stupid, and I'm glad that Tim Cook fixed that.
Yeah, but you know, that was Steve's way. I mean, he went all in when he made a decision like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Until he changed it.
Yeah, but man, he was all about this is a no stylus device. Therefore, Apple will not have a stylus.
And maybe it is important. Maybe I need to like get off my high horse about this, because maybe sticking to his guns on that was necessary to hammer the point home, and that maybe it was necessary to keep developers in particular and users to a lesser degree from sticking with what they knew.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even though they didn't need a stylus, like, you know, sticking with it because, again, that's what everyone had always used.
Yeah, and it became a critical differentiating factor for Apple compared to other device makers, because everything else needed that stylus.
Yeah. Until Google shifted on a dime to copy iOS, and Samsung spent enormous efforts to copy the design of the iPhone.
Yes, they did. And I have to say, though, it was a pretty smart move on Google's part to buy Android. Because they didn't invent the operating system. They bought it. And then to have the prescience to look at what Apple was doing and very quickly change their plans for what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, because Android was a BlackBerry clone.
Yeah. Yeah. Google got it like right away. And they knew that Apple would
dominate the smartphone market with iPhone or iOS if they didn't do something else, and they didn't want to be locked out, and they successfully did so.
And they did. And Microsoft completely dropped the ball because they didn't believe that Apple was going to be successful.
Same thing with BlackBerry.
Yeah. And now look at BlackBerry. They've shut down the BlackBerry servers a few days ago.
Do you remember like all the early dissing of like iPad in particular, and iPhone too, from BlackBerry, and all the smack talk that they made back in the day?
That doesn't go on a keyboard.
Because that's important to me. Pardon my language. I'm going to have to edit that out.
Okay, there's another question for the audience. If Brian and I do this show as our own thing, do you want explicit tags?
Yeah, that is.
Or do you want family friendly all the time?
Yes.
Ish.
Yes. Yeah, because I actually had, despite my insistence on all those years for keeping everything at TMO in particular family friendly, I have a potty mouth in real life.
What?
What? Yes, it is true. And especially when I get passionate about something like you just heard bleeped. That commercial is like, because it's got a keyboard, because that's important. Oh, do you remember that commercial?
Mm-hmm.
That I want to smack that guy. I know he's just an actor. He's playing a part, but there's just nothing. It was such a douche.
And they wrote him a nice check. And so he played a douche bro character.
Yes.
And got his paycheck. And maybe next time he'll play a not douche bro character.
I haven't seen him since. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, man. You worshipped at the BlackBerry keyboard. Look where it got you.
Right. Yep. Your BlackBerry can't even do anything on a Wi-Fi network now. And for those people that are saying, wait. Yes, I know the new BlackBerry devices that are running Android work. It's the BlackBerry devices running BlackBerry's own stuff that are just like about things you stick under.
They haven't been shut down yet, have they?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's gone.
Well, if we were professionals, we would have researched exactly that.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least we're consistent, you know, top men.
The end of life is BlackBerry 10, January 4th. Yeah. No longer available. Apparently it already happened.
That's what I thought.
Who knew?
That's what I thought. Well, I kind of did. I mean, I said they already shut down. I just, you know, just saying.
Right. So what's interesting to me is how ubiquitous, like there's a tons of things that are interesting about the iPhone, but like how the iPhone has utterly transformed life, and not just for transform life.
It's been a life-changing device, and I'm not saying that in a hyperbolic way. Like seriously, when the iPhone came out, I switched from carrying a Palm handheld and a Razer flip phone.
A Razer,
which. That was a fracking awesome phone. Seriously.
It was for its context. It was amazing.
Yes. For its context. Hey, that's part of the show name. So I had the Palm, I had, the Razer and I carried a digital camera with me, and I had an iPod, and it was just all this stuff. And then iPhone comes out, and all of a sudden, I have everything together. I have basically a window into everything that I do, and it goes with me everywhere. And I always had my internet connection, and Yeah, back then, cell coverage wasn't what it is today, but practically speaking, it was everywhere.
And it's also been changing, even in emerging markets and with particularly in emerging markets. I mean, because of cheap Android phones, like it has been life changing on a much more fundamental level there. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's a bit of a stretch, but Android doesn't exist. Android that we know today does not exist without iPhone of today. That to me is an indisputable fact.
I'll agree with you on that.
And while Apple is not addressing the cheap, you know, Apple is not out there trying to sell to the third world or to emerging markets, but Android is. There are device makers with Android on their devices who are, and that has brought at least some aspect of modern computing to a billion or two or more people who otherwise would not have had access to it, or who would have had access to it in the form of internet cafes.
Yes, I agree. There's a part of what the original idea of Android was that I find absolutely fascinating, which is that it was designed to free smartphone users from the shackles of their service providers. Mm-hmm. Meaning, up to that point, whatever was on your phone was what your service provider allowed. And so you couldn't get other apps, or you know, it was basically just locked down to what your service provider would allow. And the idea was Android was going to free users from that. And in the end,
Apple freed that.
Exactly. It was Apple that freed everyone. And Android ended up being for most users exactly what it didn't want to be, which is something that kept the users shackled to what the service provider would allow.
Right. I think that is one of the we talked about it at the time. We wrote about it at the time. Apple talked about it at the time. But I think that in large part, it has been sort of, you know, it's one of those many ridiculous success stories that is Apple today that just sort of gets dismissed, overlooked, forgotten about. It blends into to everything else. Is how Steve and using the iPhone was able to wrest that control from the carriers and give it to its users.
Yeah, the idea at the time that the phone user could install software updates when they wanted to, as opposed to when the carrier allowed them or pushed them out, was radical.
It was radical. It was radical that for Apple to be able to control the apps that were on the phone, for the carriers not to be able to basically make some side money by selling your screen real estate to people, that was radical.
That was radical too. Yes.
I mean, so for Apple to have that control and then to not use that control, right? I guess Apple used that control to push its own software, its own apps, and its own services. Apple certainly did use that. But what Apple did not do was use that control to make side money by whoring out your screen real estate itself to third parties.
Right, yeah. And to this day, cell service providers have no control over software updates for iPhones.
Right. None whatsoever. And which is not true in the Android world, but that's kind of beside the point. I mean, there's a lot about like the same way that Steve changed the rules by which iMac competed. And the way he changed the rules with which he as a manufacturer was negotiating, you know, the deals between the manufacturer and the cell, the carriers, like both of those were these incredibly fundamental seismic shifts in the industrial landscape. And they don't really like, there, it's overlooked, I think, it's overlooked by the broader business and financial worlds. I certainly don't think that Steve and his team get anywhere near enough credit for making those changes. Most people aren't even aware of them. Oh, did I catch you beyond? I'm sorry. Am I boring you?
You totally did. I mean,
was I nice and then just sort of like ignored it and then like covered up for you, or did I instead be a real jerk?
You know, honestly, I don't think anyone noticed. I mean, I wasn't listening. Why should they be listening? Oh, I should have had another cup of tea. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. Anyway, late in the day for you. So, anyway, iPhone, big deal then, big deal now. ubiquitous everywhere. It's interesting. 15 years. Mm-hmm. It's 15 years, man. It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. And yet it's been twice as long as, like I said, the amount of time that passed between the Palm Pilot 5 and the introduction of the iPhone.
It's really interesting.
And it's been such a seismic shift. I'll use that term again. In the for most smartphone users today, if not like almost all smartphone users today, I don't think we can imagine going back to not having this access to the world in our pockets. I mean, eventually something will replace smartphones, or at least the smartphone as we know.
Of course.
But that change is not going, that what replaces it is not going to be going back to not having access with us all the time.
I agree. And it makes me really excited to see what our communication device is 15 years from now. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does the iPhone evolve into? I mean, it's not going to be what it is today in 15 years, just like it's different now than it was 15 years ago. But I think the difference,
it's the same thing,
is going to be more radical than what it's been over the past 15 years.
Yeah, we have different flavors. We don't have something that's not ice cream, right? I mean, it's the same device with more functionality and thinner and larger, and you know, better screens, better, you know, and a camera. It's added a camera, but it added a camera long time ago.
It definitely does more than it did then, and the shape is still, for practical purposes, the same as it was 15 years ago. So what's going to be the next shift? Because we've gone through 15 years of, here are additional hardware things that can go into this device that mean you carry fewer other things. Plus now it has faster processors and more storage, and it can do all these other things with apps. And okay, great. So over the next 15 years, I think in addition to the software related stuff that we see changing, we're going to see the more radical hardware changes. Well, and 15 years from now, the iPhone of today, it'll be a different form factor.
Might be glasses, and an AirTag sized thing that we carry around in our pockets that you know is sending information to and from our glasses. You know, could be that. Could be. I don't know.
Well, and don't forget, we will have additional changes in wireless communication infrastructure, and that will play a role in how the iPhone evolves as well.
So have you watched The Expanse?
Yes. No spoilers. I'm a couple episodes behind on the current season.
Okay, but so they carry around slabs of glass.
These are pretty cool.
And this is several centuries into the future. And therefore is probably, by the way, not accurate. We tend to overestimate the near future and underestimate the far future, is the way that goes.
Well, and when we're creating this type of content, you know, sci-fi content, we create the future with the image of what we have today. I mean, if you look at Star Trek in 1966, is that right?
Yes.
And the way 65. The computer 67, worked.
68. You're right. I think the first episode was 66.
Look at the way the computer worked. And it was this incredibly sci-fi future advanced thing. But at the same time, it had punch card sounds, and it had these cards that you had to stick into it. And then look at what our vision of the computer was of the future when Next Generation started. There's no clicky sounds. The voice was very human and natural sounding. And now look at where we are just with smart speakers.
But even the original Star Trek got some voice interaction, right?
Oh yeah, it did. Yeah.
Some voice interaction.
Yeah. So, but my point is the way we envision the future technology is based on what we have for current technology. So yeah, in course. The Expanse, see, I totally brought it back. In the Expanse, that clear glass slate that everyone carries around that does everything, to me, that's the natural extension of the iPad. As we would see it in the future.
Or the iPhone.
But what we actually have at that point is not going to be that at all.
Well, one of the things that they do that I think is spot on and probably only a few decades away, not a few centuries away, is the way they'll throw up an interface into the air. And by the way, one of the things I love about the show, this is not a plot spoiler, this is a description. One of the things I love about the show is the very, very casual way that they do all of the like gestures, all the gesture based stuff. It's very, it's very,
it's very fluid.
It's very fluid and casual and taken completely for granted by the characters, which is beautiful that they were able to think about that. And better yet, be able to execute it. And like, you know, compare that to the calisthenics routine that Tom Cruise did in Minority Report.
Oh, right. Yeah. With his gloves and his calisthenics. That's a great way to describe it.
It was cool, but it was ridiculous. Like no one is going to operate a computer when you're having to do those kinds of but you know, they were trying to be dramatic.
Your interface should not be interpretive dance.
No, it should be casual and unthought of and taken for granted. It's kind of like what the Expanse does. But my point is that they'll throw they'll throw a video to someone just by this casual flick, and maybe it'll go to their device. Maybe they'll toss up an interface into the air. In other words, it's being projected. It's being holographically projected. And oftentimes with the 3D, like it might be just a 2D flat video, or it might be some kind of 3D star chart.
Right. Yep.
Where you do have all three dimensions, all three main dimensions to us being represented. And that sort of thing to me is close. So we're either having our information on our glasses, and eventually, as we've talked about many times, projected into our cortical,
into our brain balls,
or we'll just we'll either have portable displays that we carry with us, or that are ubiquitous that we can just basically access at any time from our devices. Like that to me is a relatively near term thing, that the interface becomes something that's in the air in front of us a lot, not always, but a lot of the time.
Yeah. When we want it.
Yes. But opposed to having the screen be on only on the device. That's what I'm contrasting.
Yeah, and I love those little tablets on the Expanse.
Yes, having them be clear, that doesn't jive with me because it seems like it would be distracting.
Well, if you look at what they're doing with the displays, I think it's actually really clever because it's this clear thing. So you can see through it, except for where you don't need to see through it. And then it becomes opaque. And if you're watching a video on the display or on the tablet itself, that's opaque. And if you need little buttons, the buttons are opaque. So Yeah, I'm okay with it, in part because, you know, it's really cool. And when you see someone, when the camera's facing someone and they're holding their tablet up and they're doing something, you get to see the reverse of it because you're looking through their tablet. And I think it's a cool effect.
That is also a cool effect. By the way, we both like The Expanse.
Yes.
And I think it's terrific sci-fi on TV. I haven't read the books yet. I intend to write them or read the books. I intend to read them.
Too late, they've already been written.
And I've read some other stuff by the two authors who use what is it, James?
Oh my God, I can't remember.
It's James S. A. Corey, which is actually two people.
That's right.
Right. Daniel Abraham and Ty Frank. I've read some of the stuff they do under that pen name, and I've also read some of Daniel Abraham's in solo works. I like them as authors. I very much so, as a matter of fact.
I think you'll enjoy The Expanse books. I've read several of them. Mm-hmm. And it's good you're sitting down, you know, to hear that I've read several books in a decade.
You finished them?
Yeah, too? Like I finished several of the books in the Expanse series.
Well, yeah. I thought only my book you would finish. I kind of feel cheated now. Cheated on.
Well, you know, think of this sort of like our poly reading relationship.
Okay, all right, that's fair. Anyway, regardless, we both like The Expanse. It is on Amazon now. It was originally a cable show, and Amazon picked it up when it was canceled, and I'm glad they did. It is not the perfect TV show, but it's a really good TV show, and I like their.
It's a really good show.
Dirty, used, grungy.
Be careful what your next words are.
Grungy look at life in the future, like the problems on Earth, the life in the belt, the politics between the inners, which are the people that live on Mars and Earth, and the belters. Like they just got, to me, they got so much right. And to me, they're also building on like the work of Larry Niven, who is one of my favorite sci-fi authors from the late 60s and 70s. They're really building a lot. I believe that it was Larry Niven that first started using the term belters to refer to people that live.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, at least
meaning people who live at the asteroid belt or farther out.
Yeah. And, you know, exactly. And, you know, with like, you know, he had single ship miners, you know, people that basically like they live in a ship that is little more than a cockpit with an engine strapped onto it. And then the ability to carry ore that they would go and mine from the asteroids. That was a Larry Niven thing. And, there's a lot that they're building on, I think from that kind of foundation, but great show. Really, it's great sci-fi. If you enjoy sci-fi, it's great sci-fi. But you do have to suspend your disbelief as you hear the engine sounds through space, and the missile sounds, and the firing, and the railgun sounds in space.
I mean, that's part of the whole thing with fiction. You have to have suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, but at the same time, Joss Whedon already showed us that you could do it right.
Correct. Yes, that's true.
So I wish that they would do it right. No sound.
But sometimes they do.
Not often enough. You know what would be great is if like you saw the guns firing silently in space, but then it would be inside the ship and you would hear them. That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah.
That would be cool. Anyway, great show. Yeah. Watch the show. Watch the show. Yeah. That's what I'm
saying. Go watch the show. It's your homework, you know, as if we can make you do anything.
Exactly. What we can make you do is hear that. And that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me, at least for now, at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for the Apple Context Machine. Jeff, tell us three places where we can find you.
You can find me on Twitter, Jay Gamet.
Yeah.
You can find me on YouTube, youtube.com/JayGamet.
Okay.
And you can find me on Buy Me a Coffee. buymeacoffee.com/jgamut.
Oh, I'm detecting a theme. You're so good at that.
There's a bit of a theme.
Yeah, unlike me. And again, I want to thank LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring this week's episode. Remember, you can post your first job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. Once again, that's linkedin.com/ACM to post your first job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Jeff, thanks for being here, man.
Well, thanks for having me back. And which is kind of funny to say when I discovered I'm the de facto co-host.
Surprise!
But seriously, it's always awesome getting to hang out with you, Brian.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to play you out.
Yeah, whatevs. The presents are going to be great.